The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
I had to drown. You're in a room, you know, the usual, and people staring at you. And I'm just like floating, like making myself light in a fucking room. And just like, you know what I mean? And then like pulled over on the side of the road after the audition. Like, the fuck's the matter with me?
What was I doing? I know.
Hello. My name is Will Sasso, and I will...
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks again for joining us for your favorite podcast, I'm sure, Off the Beat. I am your favorite host, Brian Baumgartner. We have a favorite of mine on the show today, the hilarious Will Sasso is with me. Will has been gracing your screens for now over 30 years, which is odd because he claims he's only 32. But anyway, he first appeared on Canadian teen television, then in incredible movies like Best in Show and Happy Gilmore, and finally on the iconic comedy sketch show Mad TV. Guess what? All of that was before the year 2000. He certainly hasn't slowed down since then, starring on shows like Less Than Perfect, Another Period, Loudermilk, and Young Sheldon. He is also an accomplished voice actor. You've heard his voice on animated shows like Family Guy, WrestleManiac, Murder Police. Also, he stole the role of Curly in The Three Stooges from me, so we're definitely going to discuss that. And as you will hear, he's a hell of an impressionist. Well, at least he really makes me laugh. Let's hear from him now. My friend and yours, Will Sasso.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
What's up, Will?
Hello, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Chilling.
You're just chilling? Where are you chilling?
I'm in Los Feliz. Where are you at?
Oh, okay. That's my old neighborhood.
Oh, really?
Is that where you live?
Yeah.
Nice.
Nice to meet you, by the way.
It's very nice to meet you. I want to talk about, I don't know if you've been reading the news. You've been in the news a little bit. recently.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
What happened? Was it the show? The show that I'm doing.
You got shows. You're basically everywhere. You're a man of all mediums, right?
There's a television show sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know how it is.
But I want to talk a little bit about how you got started. You're Canadian, eh? Right?
I am. I'm Canadian. I'm originally from just outside of Vancouver, Canada.
Yeah. We're heavy into research here.
Oh, good.
I want you to paint a little bit of a picture of your childhood for me. Your parents, I understand, were Italian immigrants. Are you first generation? Well, not American, I guess Canadian. You were the first ones born. Yeah. And how was that? How was that culturally for you with your parents being Italian? They spoke Italian mostly, I assume.
Yeah. They spoke Italian a lot, you know, to each other and stuff. And then after I went to Italy as a kid, then I learned Italian. So that, you know, so then they couldn't hide stuff from me or speak over my head. But my brother and sister were both born in Italy. And then shortly after that, my mom and dad decided to move out, brought a bunch of aunts and uncles and cousins with them. And my dad had promise of employment out in Vancouver, kind of, you know, and they made the big move. And then I was born like 10 years later.
What were you as a kid like growing up? Like, were you interested in sports or performing?
I was probably exactly like you, okay. You know? Yeah. You know, it was the typical class clown bullshit.
Right.
So I wanted to, you know, act and rah, rah, and you couldn't shut me up and all this stuff. So I got involved in all the plays but I was also, did jock and playing all the sports and stuff, which I went to a school that was really, my high school was really friendly to the performing arts. And we had like a great theater program and rah, 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 and this and that. So it was nice that I could do both things. And there was, you know, nobody bugged the theater nerds in our school because there were like also a bunch of jocks who were in all the productions.
You know, I don't know about the jocks thing, but you are right. We were very similar. And the school that I went to, yeah, exactly. Like, there was no like stigma about being, exactly cool. Like what you're saying. Like, you know, was a theater department and arts center with quite a good reputation. And I feel like it was sort of honored in that way by the rest of the community. But what I'm interested about for you, and I wonder if it's the same, I'm fascinated by this. Maybe I'm the only one, but I ask most people this question. You know, when you're a kid, you grow up and maybe you want to be a fireman or maybe you want to be an actor or you want to, you know, you have this sort of dream of what you may want to do when you grow up. But like the moment for you when it changed, or if it never did change, if it was always from the beginning, from like, oh, this is a hobby, this is a activity, I guess. Like for me, there was a very clear line from when it turned from like, this will help me get into college and I enjoy doing this activity, as opposed to like, oh no, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. Was there a moment for you or a line for you where that shifted?
You know, I was fortunate enough to sort of, this is probably also like you and others in our business. I spent so much time in front of the TV sort of dreaming that I think I was conscious of. I think I knew I wanted to be an actor before I was conscious of it.
Okay.
Because I feel like I was just, when I say like class clown, I think, you know, for a lot class clowns, it's just you're sort of seeing what you don't understand. You don't recognize that there's a love there that you have for what's happening. And there's something inside of you that's making you, you know, want to be funny or whatever that means to you and whatever that can facilitate in your life. That just sort of came out, and it was, I wasn't conscious of it by the time I had already decided. It was, by the time I woke up to it, I was like, yeah, I'm gonna, I want to be an actor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was weird. Yeah. And a pretty predictable list of influences and stuff from, you know, the old, you know, Saturday Night Live and SCTV and all the funny stuff, Monty Python and things that I'd watched growing up. And, yeah, I just wanted to be an actor.
That was it. Yeah, I mean, I read that you had an agent and you were booking TV roles by the time you were 15, which that is very much not me.
Yeah.
But you was like film and television. Was that like what you wanted to do? Was that your early focus? Because for me, it was theater for me and being on stage. And that was really all I thought that I was ever going to do. For you, was it different?
I wanted to be in television and in film. I grew up out in the burbs in a town near Vancouver, and a short bus ride and you're downtown, and there was an industry, and there is now, especially, but in the late 80s and early 90s, there was a lot of stuff going on. They were shooting, 21 Jump Street out there, and a bunch of Canadian shows and American films would come up to shoot. And there were agencies. That was a really, Vancouver or Toronto or where most of that is in Canada. And so there were these agencies, and I was fortunate enough to get hooked up with one when I was 15. And then I started working when I was 16, and just, in that, my folks are, from Italy, and they didn't get what I wanted to do and stuff. For there to be an industry literally right next door was obviously a great advantage to be able to, go out there and crash some auditions and try to get represented. And then
were they supportive?
My folks? Yeah, they were cool. Cause they were like, and I feel like, they were the same with my older brother and sister, which is there was no MO of like, you have to do this or you have to do that outside of, do well in school. That's what, because there was nothing before them in Canada. So there's nothing to sort of draw from to say, here's how to do it here. It's just, love what you do, work very hard, and let us know how it's going.
Yeah. do you feel like, so they were hardworking. That was important.
Yeah.
Working hard. Yeah.
They were hard workers.
Which you clearly did. You did some early shows in Canada, Neon Rider. God, I was a huge fan of that show.
Yeah, aren't we all?
Madison, Sliders. Tell me, and then I want to talk to you about your decision to move to Los Angeles. How would you say the work, the environment, the culture in Vancouver was different than when you finally moved to LA?
Oh, very different. It was, you felt like you could sort of see the ceiling on the community there. There were many actors to this day that make an entire career there. And I can remember speaking with one in particular before I took off, and we were working together on this thing, and he played my father. And I was such a, I was like young and full of piss and couldn't wait to get down to the States and all that. And he was like, oh, I love it here. He's like, right. My kids go to school there, and I do this and a thing. And he's showing up as the heavy in all sorts of stuff that you watch. You see some whatever movie, and Harrison Ford's the president or whatever. Oh, and there's so and so. In that you could see who was in town that were at the top of the industry. It did feel it was a very nice sort of community and proving ground where you could feel like you were a part of that community. And I was fortunate enough to work on the show Madison for a number of years, which was like, it's like a Degrassi kind of show, or I sort of liken the style to like a Canadian My So-Called Life. It was like a, it was like a gritty show about teenagers and this sort of thing. With working with wonderful people, behind the scenes, that we were all young and we kind of came up, and I learned from my cohorts, really what I could about, acting. And you could sort of feel like you were, a part of this community. And then moving down to LA, I don't know. I still don't know. I don't know what the fuck's going on down here. I know you, and we've never met. But I'm sure we may agree that, right? Nobody knows what the hell is going on down here. I don't know what the ceiling is. I don't want to know what the ceiling is now, walking into some sort of Eyes Wide Shut, room where it's like, here's a 7-picture deal. No. None of that stuff happens, everybody. But, I don't know.
I have to break. I'm skipping ahead here. I can't contain it any longer. So you and I were, I don't even know if you could say we were up for the same role, because I don't know how considered at all I was. I assume not at all.
and you got it. So I'm not putting myself in the same situation, but I had an audition at least for the Three Stooges.
Oh, okay? Wow.
I'm skipping way ahead in your career. And I have to tell you this, I knew the director a little bit beforehand. I can't even believe I'm telling this publicly. I have been debating about this for like 3 days. I still refer to the audition as the worst experience of my life.
Oh, no. What happened? I got to ask you. What happened?
I want to know if you had to do the same thing, and maybe it's why you got it. I can't speak for you. I was asked to read The Three Stooges, role of Curly, Three Stooges.
Yeah.
By myself. With physical comedy, with the physical stuff that you're doing with the other people who weren't there.
Yes.
I have found this to be, I just referenced it last week, by the way, I swear to you. I found it to be the most awkward 4.5 minutes of my life.
Oh, boy.
Like maybe the only time in an audition where I was watching myself from outside of myself saying, why? Actually, there were two. And the other one was a very smart, reputable, some would call them geniuses, where I was also asked to improv the front half of me being cut by a propeller on an airplane. So there you go.
Yeah.
So did you do that? Do you remember improvising as though Mo and Larry were there, but they weren't?
I did. First, let me say that if you're in a movie and you're cut in half by a propeller, we all know there's no acting past that. Why do you need to see it?
No, they had written that. They had written me you watch your guts spilling out of the front of your body.
There's stuff happening post getting hit with the.
Yeah, there is. Yeah,
real quick, I auditioned for that movie, Pearl Harbor. And I didn't get it, and I did too. Did you?
I think I did. I don't remember what the role was.
Do you
was.
Remember being asked? This is like propeller death worthy. I had to drown in the audition. Does that ring a bell?
No, I don't think that was me. Okay,
I had to drown. You're in a room, you know, the usual, and people staring at you, and I'm just like floating, like making myself light in a fucking room, and just like. You know what I mean? And then, like, pulled over on the side of the road after the audition. Like, the fuck's the matter with me?
What was I doing? I know.
It's auditions like that, you know, then you walk into it. It's like, yeah, we want you to be the Three Stooges, you know, by yourself. Of course. Of course you do. Of course. That's the way to audition this. Yes, I did. I remember coming up with some stuff where I'm just, you know, getting hit. And then wanting to hit, but Curly never lands one. And then I did some dumb thing where I smacked myself, or like I went in to poke myself and think with, and you know, or like I hit, but that was it. Like I didn't do too much of it because I was, my opinion was like, you guys don't want to see a lot of this. You want to see some of it.
Yeah, I know. I'm sure I played it just totally wrong, but now it has become the code word for me when I get a script that is asking me to do something, which is like, dude, you're covering this in a close up. You're not going to see anything right now that resembles anything. Like my brain goes to like producer, actor, like director. Where it's like, this is not serving you any purpose.
Right.
And it's only making me look absolutely ridiculous. Not that clearly by my work, I don't mind looking like an idiot.
Good.
Like that's not a problem. But I just, that one. Whew. I mean, God bless you because you clearly nailed it.
Oh, cheers. Cheers. It was fun.
Yeah. But I remember that. I remember that day. I remember those days and just going like, what am I? Just let me play with somebody else, please.
For sure. And then, by the way, you show up, you know, we go out there and literally just smack the shit out of each other for a couple months. Like there was barely any acting. Like it's like, well, how are we going to do this? And he's like, well, they slap the snot out of each other, so that's what we're going to do. Yeah, but
right.
Yeah, but then Curly got so messed up that they were taping his head shut, and Moe's going like, this doesn't look so good. And then he had to retire. That's what we're doing? Okay. Falling down real holes and hitting each other with ladders. And all right. Okay.
Yeah, it sounds about right.
Yeah.
Well, that's not where it started for you or ended. You joined the cast in 1997 of Mad TV. You talked about SNL, SCTV as being early influences. Was this a dream for you? Was this a
absolutely dream? Absolutely. Yeah. To do sketch was just... I grew up watching sketch, feeling like this is an incredible medium because these people get to do so many different things and, you know, scratch all those comedy itches. And I love that aspect of it. I love this kid, you know, you watch Dan Aykroyd, he's one guy in one sketch, in the next sketch, he's a completely different person. And had always watched sketch. It was my favorite thing growing up. So, yeah, to end up in the cast of Mad TV was incredible. I was so blown away that I got to do it, still am. And it was one of those things also because the show was, I joined in the show's third season, and I was really stoked to be a part of something that was new and didn't have, where obviously Saturday Night Live is the big daddy and has, I mean, you know, I could talk for 5 days about how great SNL is. And certainly anyone who shows up on Saturday Night Live, it's on them to bring who they are and bring a new thing to it. And that's the only way the show can continue and has continued, you know, but there was an extra layer of the unknown at Mad TV where we don't even really know what the show is. You know, it was, I don't know if we ever figured it out, but you could kind of do all sorts of stuff that in hindsight, I kind of go, well, that might have been something that you wouldn't have even been able to do or been allowed to do on other sketch shows.
Right.
And of course, your mind goes to comparing things to Saturday Night Live because it is the sketch show. I still can't believe we got to do that. It was just too much fun. You know,
you talked about having the sketch being one of your favorite things to watch. Did you do long form improv as well early on?
No, I didn't.
So this was sketch.
Yeah, I kind of, you know, came up, you know, doing a lot, mostly everything scripted, you know, and by the time I had moved to LA, I was really just pursuing acting and didn't do any live stuff at all, really, before I showed up at Mad.
Favorite impressions to do?
I like, you know, I have a bunch of the impressions I used to do at Mad TV, which are a lot of fun to do. And nowadays, I kind of amuse myself by being able to do smaller impressions that I didn't know that I could do, and maybe I can't do. Like lately, I've been doing. This is, see, no, you're not going to know. You know what? I'll just do it, and then you tell me if you have any idea who I'm doing.
Oh,
and these
boy.
Are the sort of things that I annoy my wife and my friends with. Okay, ready? Here it is.
Yeah.
You must be Jimmy. Here, I'll do it again. Hold on. Ready? You must be Jimmy. Right?
Okay.
This is, of course, Harvey Keitel in Pulp Fiction, when he shows up at Quentin Tarantino's house and he says,
You must be
Jimmy.
Jimmy.
Now, my friends are like, Will, you sound absolutely nothing like him. And that's not a good impression. And I go, Not yet. But you must be Jimmy. And as I'm doing that, I'm just sounding more like Robert De Niro and probably confusing the two in my head.
You're getting closer.
Yeah. Stuff like that. So favorite impressions, like I suck at as many impressions or more than I do ones that I'm like, oh, that sounds like him.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah. You must be Jimmy.
You must be Jimmy. Feel free to use that.
I'm going to, actually. Yeah. You have no idea.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road. But if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Ready to start your new journey? Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Enjoy Zyn nicotine pouches for 10 days and discover a fresher way to experience nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. Here's how to get started with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Simply pick your strength and varieties online and check out. Once your Zyn nicotine pouches arrive in the mail, enjoy pure nicotine satisfaction at your leisure. After your 10-day trial, let us know what you think. If Zyn isn't for you, no hard feelings. It's that simple. Order online at Zyn.com, that's Zyn.com, to start your new journey today with the Zyn 10 Challenge. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
You guys did a reunion season. Like, how was that after so many years getting back together? Was that so fun? Did you know it was just going to be one bit, or were you kind of like, oh, let's see if this still works?
Well, they had a new cast, actually. They did it in 2015, I think.
16. You weren't involved with that at all?
I was.
Oh, yeah.
But there was a brand new cast, and then some of us, they brought in some of the old gang to do bits here and there. Pretty much every show, there was one or two of the old guard. Really creepy getting back into it. Like, you know, because I don't know, it had been, I guess, 16.
Well, like 20 years since you started it.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty real weird. So I don't know. Like, I was doing a bit which used to be very physical, and I get hurt and stuff. And I'm like, I don't want to do any of that. It won't even look good. But then you do it and it doesn't look good and it hurts. but yeah, that was bizarre when some of the old cast were like around each other, like in our old getups. There's no way to not go like, oh, you fucking believe this? What am I doing? You know? Like, no. There's just no way, because it's like we're older and it's like, oh, look at you. What are you doing? You know? And the ones who out of the old cast were like, no thanks, not for me. You later go like, mm-hmm, smart. And you know, and the show only lasted 1 year, but they were in a shitty position. They were on the CW, which is not where the show used to be. The show was on Fox. And they put them on, I'm pretty sure this is correct. I know it was the middle of the week. I'm pretty sure it was Tuesday nights at 10. And it's
CW?
On the CW, which means you can't do anything.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, you would sort of, cover some of the old stuff. And you were told, like, nah, we can't go there. And it's like, yeah, okay. What are you doing? Why are we doing this?
Let's do a season 20 years later.
Yeah.
Of a groundbreaking show that, even though network's standards and practices is much looser now. You're going to do less than what you did 20 years before. That doesn't sound like a great idea.
No, no, it didn't. It didn't work. And I feel bad because the cast was fantastic. The writers were fantastic. And a lot of the old writers came back, a few of them, to, you know, really make sure that it was Mad TV. And yeah, I don't know. Didn't work.
A lot of times I'm jumping all over the place. I usually go chronological with people, but I feel like you've been working for 30 years with amazing actors and comedians. I'm kind of cherry picking here with you. And this one is personal for me because I just spent 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. with Catherine O'Hara up in Napa, California. Let's just say this, Will. We had a day. We could have an hour on that day alone. I know you worked with her in Best in Show. Did you know Christopher before this? Christopher Guest?
No.
Okay.
No.
So this was just an audition. No Canadian connection. Okay.
No. No.
Okay. Yeah. How was that experience like for you?
I mean, I showed up to do Best in Show, and I was like, Christopher Guest is one of the funniest people ever.
Yes.
And I was a huge, and still am a huge Spinal Tap fan. I'd seen the movie so many times. This is Spinal Tap. And I loved Waiting for Guffman. And this was
the third one, right? There was Spinal Tap. There was Guffman.
Yes.
Was this his third one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Of that genre.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what I mean.
You know, and I was such a geek for it. I was like, oh, there's Kieran Murphy, the producer of Spinal Tap. Like, this is insane. We're shooting this scene that I don't think any of it is still in the movie, where the one fellow is explaining to me these fishing lures. And Mr. Guest was just like, so you don't get it. You just don't get it. You don't understand why we're putting fishing lures on a map. And it's like, okay. And he's like, see, you wake up in the morning and you want to go fishing. And I'm like, well, go back further. It's the day before. Well, I don't know why you need, okay, it's the day before and you want to go fishing. Wait, why would you be a fisherman to begin with? Whatever, playing dumb. And then I keep touching the stuff, and there was a shot overhead, and Christopher Guest keeps slapping my hand off of the thing in the bit, like keeps slapping my hand away. And I'm laughing. I keep cracking up. And he goes, like, just dry as hell, right? He goes, if you laugh, then we can't use that. And I'm like, and I did a few years later, whatever, I did a scene for Mighty Wind that didn't end up in the film.
Okay.
Where I'm a balloon delivery guy, and I'm delivering these balloons to Larry Miller. And the balloons are red, white, and black. So they're wrong. They're supposed to be red, white, and blue. And I'm like, here's the balloon sign here. Larry Miller's like, what is this? What kind of red, white, and black? Why? I'm like, I don't know. Sign here. And he's like, what country is that? You know, we're doing the scene, and he cracks me up. He's in the middle of his thing. You know, he's, I don't even know what Balkan country or what. And I'm like, and I start to crack up. And Christopher Guest, who now in The Mighty Wind has this, like, you know, bozo hairdo, you know, with this like red hair in a, you know, in the horseshoe hairdo. You know, like us here. And he walks over, he takes the headphones down, and he walks over very serious, and he goes, I don't know if you'll remember this, but a few years ago we had a conversation. And I'm like, just, but you never get, he's a very sweet man. He'll write you like I've gotten like a handwritten note, you know, like from the desk of Christopher Guest, you know, based on whatever you'd worked on with him or whatever, you get this nice note. Extremely wonderful, giving guy, and great actor to work with. But I feel like I never, like everyone that I talk to that has worked with him has that sort of review of like, it's intimidating, you know? I mean, he's,
right.
it's intimidating and a lot of fun.
You did four seasons on Less Than Perfect, playing Carl. Now, this is back on network television, obviously very different from Mad TV. How was that experience for you?
Oh, that was a lot of fun. I loved doing that show, and it was just this. Yeah, it was a show about. It was an office comedy. I don't know if you're familiar with that sort of genre, but yeah, it was an office comedy. It was a multi-camera office comedy that not as many people watched as the one. But yeah, it was a blast. You know, what can I say? I was, you know, doing Mad TV, where I remember there was one day where I was on the cast of Less Than Perfect. And I went to Mad TV to do a couple bits. This is a 2 or 3 years after I had left the show. And the Mad TV got sizable budget cuts every year for the 14 seasons that they did the show. So on this particular day that I came to do a couple bits for the show that week, I was walking backstage or just on the stage, and there's, you know, cables everywhere and stuff. And the lights were only on the set that they were shooting on. So like you almost needed like your own flashlight to go like where, and I didn't realize this. And I just go walking onto the stage and just completely, you know, I trip on a bunch of cables and fall over. And I'm like, what the fuck? They don't even turn the lights on anymore here. Like, yeah. And I remember going back to Less Than Perfect later that day. You know, you're fortunate enough to be working on this sitcom. And I was over at, you know, craft service eating a, you know, coffee cup full of bacon or whatever. And the producers were there, the showrunners, Nina and Gene. And I remember I very sincerely was like, you know, this experience is so wonderful. And you guys, and I, somewhere in, I said, you know, you're keeping the lights on. And I said that. And they were looking at me like,
what are you talking about?
What the fuck are you talking about? And now I can't go further and go, well, you know, I used to be on the sketch show, and they're really cheap over there. And, you know, you got to be. And they keep getting the budget is, you know, it's like, why are they even doing the show anymore? And I tripped on some cables earlier. And I just really appreciate the fact that you guys have deviled eggs or whatever. You know what I mean? And
yeah, there's nothing like, to say.
Yeah, there's nothing to say.
There's nothing whatever. To say.
With what we do, if you can be on a network show or any show, I'm right. Just like, there's no work you can do as an actor that justifies how grateful you should feel to be doing that sort of stuff. So that show was an absolute, it was a gas, and I loved everyone that I worked with. Sarah Rue, Sherry Shepherd, Andy Dick, Andrea Parker, Zach Levi, Patrick Warburton, and Eric Roberts. I don't think I'm missing anybody.
Such a fun show.
Yeah, it was a fun show with a great group of people. And yeah,
your guest star roles... I'm saying all of this really to get to the end. Your guest star roles, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Grey's Anatomy, Modern Family, How I Met Your Mother, Entourage, 2½, blah, blah, blah. But I want to talk to you about maybe your greatest guest role. You were on WWE SmackDown a few times. So now I need to understand. I understand it started as a cross promotion with Mad TV or something, but then you ended up with an arc there and you had matches. Talk to me. You were a big wrestling fan.
Yeah.
I'm told. So I am. This was all you're doing. Was this like your dream, your total dream come true?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm a huge wrestling dork and, and still am. And it's like, that's my thing. I really still love professional wrestling. So,
right.
On Mad TV, we had Bret Hart come on, at which time he came on, he was the world heavyweight champion in the WWF back in the day. And then he comes on the show and we did this bit. And at the end of the bit, he comes back in and surprises me legitimately in the thing. And we're dorking around. And then I put him on my shoulders and I like spun him around a bit in an airplane spin, which is not... This is the world heavyweight champion of the WWF. And I'm like, wee, you know, so, but Brett's so mellow and cool. And we're talking about it. And our producer at Mad TV, Brian Hart, no relation, is also a big wrestling fan. And his gear started turning like, what could we do with this? And it was really his idea to have Brett back the next year and do this thing where he attacks me in front of the cast and in front of the audience. And only a handful of people knew about it. And in hindsight, that was shitty to do. But we did this sort of fake, you know, this sort of, oops, don't say fake, but Because he hit me as hard as he could with this folding chair. He goes, "You want me to pull back on the, you want me to hit and pull back a bit, or what do you?" And I was like, because I wanted it to look good. I was like, "Oh," and we're pals at this point. I'm like, "Don't worry, Brett, you can't hurt me," knowing that he could kill me if you wanted. And he hit me so hard, I had raised welts on my back.
With a a real folding chair?
Yeah, it was one of those folding chairs, though, that isn't metal. It was, you know, it's got plastic bits, but the framing is metal.
Okay. So
it still connected and hurt. It just that weighs less. Like it,
okay.
Yeah, it still hurt. You know, it was a terrible thing to get hit with that hard, but it just stung so bad. And then I was wearing like a gator pad on my knee, and I fall down. He starts smashing my knee. Then he puts me into the sharpshooter, his hold, and we go into this Andy Kaufman, Jerry Lawler arc where, you know, cut two, I end up on Monday Nitro. He's with WCW now. And we have a match where it's like, before that, I'm like on like a couple of entertainment magazines going, "Yeah, I'm going to sue the guy," and blah, blah, blah. And people are buying it. And then it's like, it's all leading up to this match. I interfered in a match the week before in Buffalo and helped interfere. And Rowdy Roddy Piper took the US title from Brett that night, which that's mind blowing. And I could go on about all of it. And then we have this match.
This was a year set up for you guys to actually have a match. This was all leading to this.
Yeah, it was leading to having a match. And it was,
God.
And Brett is, you know, the greatest. And some say, you know, and I would say the greatest in-ring performer ever. And they call him the best there ever was, best there ever will be, and the excellence of execution for a reason. He could have a match with, you know, a bag of flour, and he did that night. He basically, he took me in there in the afternoon, you know, just to get used to the ring and stuff. He gives me a side Russian leg sweep. Boom, we both hit the ground, this thing. And I go, okay. And then he just goes, "You know, you watch this stuff your whole life. You get it." I'm like, "No, I don't. No, I don't. What do you mean?" And he says that because he's that good. And he goes, "Just don't move unless I move you. You'll know what I'm doing. And I'll tell you if I have to." I was like, okay. And it went off without a hitch because I just did what he said.
Like, are you getting shots off on him or no?
Well, this is the thing that makes it very easy. We showed up and we go backstage, you know, and we're hanging out with some of the wrestlers and the bookers at the time. And we're talking with Brett and Brian Hart, our producer at Mad TV. We're flying over and he was like, because my thing was like, and his thing too, it's like, I hate it when you have these guests from the world of television and film come into wrestling and then they're getting one over on them. Like, why does Jay Leno have Hulk Hogan in a headlock? Like, that makes no sense.
Right, right.
So anyone who steps in the ring with these guys should just immediately get the shit kicked out of them.
Right.
That's okay. What would happen. And that's what, you know, wrestling is
right.
The illusion. So we pitched that to Brett. We're like, you know, we don't know how it starts or whatever. Maybe Will kind of pisses you off because he's even just in the ring. This makes no sense. You're like, why do I have to do this? And you just kick the shit out of him for how long is the segment? 8 minutes? Okay. And Brett laughed. Yeah, good, good. And that's what we did. So at the beginning, Brett's like kind of frustrated and he puts the hand up for like the test of strength where they go. So it's like, what, you're going to have a test of strength with this TV actor? You know, this big out of shape dude or whatever. And so he just goes like this and he kicks me in the gut and goes against the ropes and clocks me. And he just beats the shit out of me the whole time, which I thought was hilarious.
Eight minutes you got your ass kicked?
Well, that's the segment time. So okay, I guess it was that included the intros and the outro. So like 5 minutes. Yeah, five minutes. And he did fun stuff. Like he goes and grabs a chair and it's like, oh, no, he's going to hit him with the chair again. But just to put the chair in the middle of the ring and like drink a bottle of water and go,
okay,
what are we doing here? And it was the playing out of my dreams, not just
being
in a wrestling ring, but being in there with Bret Hart. It still to this day makes no sense. And at one point I was literally, again, he's like, I will pick you up. I will do the next thing. You know, don't move. And Brian Hart wanted him to do this one move that he does, the quick leg drop. And at one point I'm laying there on the ground. I didn't know that he was about to do it, but like he said, don't move. And I remember literally time slowing down, and I was looking up at the lights, and I'm just going, "This is unbelievable. I'm on WCW. This is crazy. Life's crazy." This all happens within a second of me thinking this, and I go, anyway, I start to get up. He's in the air when I start to get up. So my head is now up, you know, with the length of my shoulder to the ground, and he's coming down with the leg drop and could break my neck. And only Bret Hart and, you know, whatever, a lot of them, they're incredible performers and athletes and actors. And he bends his knee at the last second, creating this perfect cradle from I would have broken my neck easily. And he's tossing me in the corner and stomping me in the chest, and you don't feel anything. And I remember walking outside afterwards, just like taking a breather, going like just getting away from all of it. Like, and just going, I just had a shitty match that everyone was like, boo, fuck off for real. Nobody wants this. We like this show. You should know that nobody wants this, Will Sasso. You should know. You're a wrestling dork. Boo. And I'm walking out there going, I can't believe I just did this. And Bret Hart, you know, tosses me around and nothing hurt. And it was unbelievable.
If you're a smoker or dipper looking to make a change, you really only need one reason to do it. But with Zyn nicotine pouches, you can find many. Not only did Zyn create the first ever nicotine pouch, we're still America's number one choice for smoke-free, spit-free nicotine satisfaction. It could be because Zyn is made with only 6 simple ingredients, including naturally derived nicotine salt. Or maybe it's because Zyn is the only nicotine pouch with a 10-day trial. For anyone worried Zyn won't cut it like traditional tobacco, just ask one of the millions of people who have achieved lasting change. You have lots of options when it comes to nicotine satisfaction, but there's only one Zyn. Find your Zyn online or in a store near you at zyn.com/find. That's zyn.com/find. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
You're coming to the end. I've had the opportunity to work with Chuck Lorre a couple of times.
Great.
I know you have played Jim McAllister, Mandy's dad, on Young Sheldon. How does it feel that it's coming to an end?
Yeah, it's incredible to be a part of something that to come in at the end of an incredible run like that they've had. They've been going for 7 years, and I've been playing Emily Osment's father, myself, and Rachel Bay Jones for the past couple of years. And, yeah. I mean, it's lovely to go onto a Chuck Lorre set, first of all. Everyone's very happy to be there, and just what a nice group of people. And I've been fortunate enough to work on a couple of other of his shows, and it's the same across the board. And to be in this, you know how it is. They say it's a TV family, it's like a family, but it really is. I mean, it's the easiest job in the world to come into a well-oiled machine and just hit the ground running. And hopefully, if there are no snags there, and it makes sense, and you're an addition to the story, that makes sense. I mean, what else? What can I say? It's been wonderful, and it's also really interesting to be there at the end of it because, you know, these kids, Ian, Reagan, and Montana, grew up together. They grew up together, the three of them, and Zoe and Lance and Annie Potts. You know, they are like the parents and grandparents of these kids in a way that's, you know, it's very interesting. You know, like just seeing them grow up must have been. I don't know how those kids sort of separate from each other and from this experience. You know, you and I know that it's like you work with people, you say you'll keep in touch, you don't. You know, we all move on to other things, and there's this high turnaround. So it's always special to be a part of something that has its legacy and is winding down, and to be there at the very end of it is something to observe. You know, because I feel nothing. Right. I feel nothing. No, I'm observing, going like, this is incredible.
Yeah. Will Ferrell, who came in right around the time Steve Carell left, he came in, he did four episodes with us. Steve was leaving. He was like, it's the weirdest thing. It feels like I was invited to a funeral of someone I didn't know. Like everybody's
that's perfect.
We're making a comedy, but everybody's kind of crying and sad, and it's like this weird experience. But I get at least in one level what you're saying.
Yeah,
the throwback. You finished the throwback what, 17 years ago?
Something like that.
A long time ago.
Yeah, it was right before Mad TV. We got going with that.
That's what I hear. No, it was a long time ago, right?
I think we shot it a couple of years ago. And isn't it weird? Like, we'll do something, and then what happened to that? And then it comes out. Yeah, so
it's
been a
couple years. It's getting unbelievable press. My crack research team, meaning me, saw 96% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah.
Everybody's watching it. Everybody is loving it. After so much time, are you happy with the reception that the movie's getting? Do you remember it feeling good about it when you shot it a few years ago?
I did. It was Justina Machado is starring in the movie, and I play her husband, and she's an old friend. She's an old pal. So it was so...
Oh, you knew? Okay, got it.
I knew Justina, and we have had the same manager for many, many years, like 25, 20, whatever years. And Justina and I did something similar, similar meaning we played husband and wife in this short that I made a while back, and it worked. It was great. So it was a first time director, and Mario, the director, was a very sweet guy and not hiding the fact that it was his first time directing a feature. And so it was cool to just kind of go like, well, you know, we just got to play these scenes, and I don't know, until he says cut, which sometimes he would forget to do because he's a first time director. And then he goes, just kind of looking around, and someone goes, you have to say cut, huh? You have to say. And then we're on set going, what do we do? Should we? I don't want to say it. Can you say it? And as we know, you have to stay in your boxes with regard to your union.
Yes.
So sometimes we would just keep rolling into the night, and they would just waste a lot of money that way and went horribly over budget. But 2 years later, they got that. They didn't get their money back, but they got, you know, enough money to put it out. It was a fun movie.
You have a podcast. I don't know if you knew that or not, called
Dudesy. I'm in the studio right now. Yeah.
There it is, Dudesy. Tell me about, first off, tell my listeners about Dudesy, the podcast.
Dudesy is a podcast with an AI bent to it. There's an AI theme to where myself and my good buddy, Chad, whom I've known for over 20 years, around that. And he's a writer, producer, primarily. I'm an actor. And so it's these, the idea is here's two guys that have been friends for a long time. We've worked together. We've written things together and done shit like that. And the conceit here is that malevolent AI has procured us to do this podcast together. And there's elements of it that are all too real. And there are elements of it that are not, because it is a comedy show.
Right. And the AI, this dudesy acts as your producer, your boss, your...
Pretty much comes up with all, you know, like is feeding us segments saying, do this, do that, which is a fun way to come about things. Like if it's like, you know, in a podcast, it's kind of one thing to go, well, I'm going to do this impression and bore the, you must be Jimmy. And then everyone's bummed out. But it's another thing to go like, well, hey, you know, like, podcasts about news or big business. Will, you won't stop doing your Hulk Hogan impression. This is Infomania. It's like, let me tell you something about the news, dude. We got all sorts of news out there, brother. And I'm gonna do it. So it's a way to get all these, you know, bits going and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very thick, weird delivery with it's a very complex delivery that is, look. I love professional wrestling. I don't know if we've mentioned that.
Yeah, we've mentioned it.
Yeah. And so, you know, the idea of kayfabe there, like, well, what's real? And I don't fucking like AI at all. And Chad digs it. Of course, in our business, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Right.
And Chad really, like, he digs it. But he's like a futurist and a weirdo tech dork. And he loves that stuff. And I'm like, I don't need any of it. I like acting with people. And I like, right. And to me, art is useless if it's not person to person. If a person didn't come up with the art, it's useless. But the podcast sort of comments on that and sort of like, you know, what is it that AI can do? And yeah, more recently, what is it that people will believe, you know?
Right.
It's odd. It's certainly odd. It's been an odd thing.
I read somewhere, is this part of the lie? That dudesy has access to your text messages? Is this a bit?
Have I mentioned how much I like professional wrestling?
All right, never mind.
Dudesy, well, the thing that what you're describing is, in order for dudesy to do the show where it is able to bring stuff up from our past, come up with the best concepts for us, and in its function, it promises to make each episode better than the last episode because it is constantly gathering data. Why wouldn't it have all of our passwords, search histories, purchase histories, access to all of our hard drives and clouds so that it can make this show possible? If there's a video that Dudesy wants to show from my past, it has access. If there's a bit of writing that Dudesy wants to highlight from Chad's, you know,
I got you.
And then other things happen and people go, you know, man, I don't know. People are like, uh-oh, it's AI. It's like, so interesting to me to be like, yeah, but, you know, isn't everything? I haven't said too much. So it's.
I didn't know if you were going to say anything at all. So I like it.
It's an interesting thing. Look, I really enjoy, you know, working. I love the illusion of what we get to do.
I love it.
And to me, you know, nobody watches an episode of their favorite show and goes, well, why is that person being mean to that person? Or why does this, it's like, well, because it's a show. It's like, and it's like professional wrestling where it's like, well, we all know that behind the scenes, there's a show here. There's a show that's being produced. Chad and I are messing with each other constantly in our lives. And some of that can come into the show, which is a lot of fun.
Right.
And there can be a lot of surprising ourselves and one another. You know, I don't know. Do you have a question past that? I don't know how much I should say. I really don't. To me, it's clear, I don't know. All I know is that I love doing the damn show.
You love doing the show.
Yeah.
And you know, there has been some conversation about the show, which, by the way, may not be terrible for the show, that you guys have used AI with, I don't even know how you say it, Tom Brady and George Carlin over right. the last year or so. Are you surprised by the flack that you have gotten from that? Is it totally understandable to you? And are you planning to AI me anytime in the next year?
I'm surprised by the flack, but it does make sense.
Okay.
It makes perfect sense to me. You know, I read this one article that was from Ars Technica that I thought was very good. And it pointed out, you know, kind of went through some of the stuff that has come out of the show. And this is a person who clearly understands AI and what the parlor trick is. Because I always say, like, AI can't really do, it is not sentient. It's just zeros and ones, and it mimics and it predicts, and it is capable of so many things artistically that we are capable of. And that, to me, is hopefully it just sort of settles into being a tool. I think that my brain right now can't understand. I am the guy screaming at the horseless carriage right now going, no, we don't want this. You know, my pal Chad will say, it's not like that. It's just going to settle into being a tool. You know, think of the film camera and how people rebelled against that, the radio, the printing press, whatever, anything, the calculator. So we're in this bizarre time in AI where it is growing exponentially. You know, it's interesting. We used to do Mad TV. There are parody
impressions.
Yeah, you're doing impressions. And it's like, I never heard anything, but first of all, I have reverence for pretty much everyone that I ever impersonated. It came from a real love of, you know, talking like them or doing their shtick or whatever, or right. having them on my mind and wanting to do an impression. But certainly at Mad TV, we wouldn't get in shit for doing an impression of someone because it's understood that it is, it's just a parody.
Yeah.
I guess when you put a different paint job on it and put it out there, but all you really have is jokes that, you know, Chad wrote. And there is no, it's an open secret, you know, like people right. who enjoy the show are like very into the whole delivery of it. Oh, and on that note, I should say that I am currently the Dudesy undisputed episode champion.
Nice.
Recently, I got a hold of, there I am right there.
There you are.
And so if you need any more of a clue as to what is happening over here, you do something and you kind of go like, well, here's this bit. And the fella at Ars Technica, what he had written in this piece is like, am I to believe that these two dudes got a hold of an AI that is way, way more advanced than anything that anyone at MIT even could get their hands on at this point. That is me saying too much, because to me, all I want to do is, you know, make some people laugh and stuff. So when there's a reaction, I'm like, oh, fuck. Uh-oh. Okay. Well, I don't know, but we got to try stuff.
Yeah.
But to me, it is, you know, it is, it's understandable because we don't know what the future holds, you know?
Right.
Even with stuff that is total nonsense.
Well, I think it's fascinating. I think it's a discussion, as is everything in art, a discussion at least worth yeah. having and sussing it out. But I appreciate you being so candid about it. And I hope that people will check it out.
You know, Dudesy. What? Can I tell you this?
Yeah.
Let me tell you this, Brian, real quick. Sorry. I kind of feel like so long as, you know, when people tune in to Dudesy, which is, you know, YouTube and all your podcast platforms, by the way, when people watch Dudesy, so long as they are enjoying that hour of Dudesy and the weirdness that happens, to me, that's what it is. And I say everything that I've said here with I'm keeping in mind, you know, our beloved PODs, as we like to call them, the pals of Dudesy, people who are very engaged in the show and really love it. And, you know, they're lighting up our Discord and keeping this community alive. And what I've found is a bunch of other comedy nerds that really dig being a part of this weird thing. And I tell them all the time when we do the show or we do this dudesy after dudesy where things kind of chill out and we talk a little more real. And I go like, I just love that experience of it. And it's the same for me coming in here and doing this dumb stuff. And that's what I want people to understand, that it's a silly goose time and we're doing silly shit. Certainly, this is nothing new. People are going to have their own reactions. I really don't have anything to say about that. I really don't.
Well, that is art and that is comedy and that is a good thing.
Everyone can take that. Yeah, it's yours to interpret, of course.
That's right. Well, it's been so great chatting with you and getting to know you a little bit. I've been such a fan of yours for such a long time.
Oh, cheers. Likewise, man.
Everybody, check it out. The Throwback, Young Sheldon, finishing next month. And of course, available wherever you get your podcasts and on YouTube, Dudesy. Will, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
The undisputed episode champion of the world
of two
or at
guys.
Least of Dudesy.
Yeah,
it's only you or Chad.
It's only near him.
Congratulations, man.
Maybe my dog. Oh. Julio, remember that time you almost won? Never mind. All right.
Thanks, Will. Thank you so much.
Cheers, Brian. Thank you.
Thank you, Will. That was a lot of fun. And no, I will never get in the ring with you. Listeners, check out Dudesy Podcast. It is an interesting watch and listen, to be sure, wherever you get your podcasts. Also, you can see Will, finishing up his run on Young Sheldon and, of course, on Netflix, The Throwback. Check that out as well. Come back next week for another exciting episode with a very exciting guest. Until then, everybody, have a great week. Off the Beat is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Ling Lee. Our senior producer is Diego Tapia. Our producers are Liz Hayes, Hannah Harris, and Emily Carr. Our talent producer is Ryan Papa Zachary, and our intern is Ali Amir Sahin. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by the one and only Creed Bratton.
The journey to a smoke-free future can be a long and winding road, but if you're ready for a change, consider taking Zyn for a spin. Zyn nicotine pouches offer a fresh way to discover your nicotine satisfaction. Anywhere, anytime. No smoke, no spit, and no lingering odor. Get in gear with the Zyn 10 Challenge and enjoy 10 smoke-free, spit-free days for just $5.95. Order online and start your new journey today. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.